The only difference between this presentation, at least the format that is in the PowerPoint and the one from last year, is that about 3 minutes ago you probably noticed I changed the 08 to 09. So it's updated, it's current, it is very current. I moved to Minnesota about 5 years ago because I really enjoyed running the Twin Cities Marathon, and that's not actually a lie. And there are a lot of reasons, but like running the Twin Cities Marathon and seeing how great the trails were here were actually a pretty big part of me choosing to move here. And then I moved here, and then the very first week I was here, I found MDRA online and ended up running trails I never even knew existed. And then throughout that course of that summer, through the MDRA Around the Town run, we ran with Marty helped organize, actually. So thank you, Marty. I ran, you know, what seemed like dozens of different trails, mostly soft trails, all around the Twin Cities that I never even heard of. And a lot of people I know that are runners have still never even heard of. So I like to just be able to share some of the very small fraction of the routes in the Twin Cities that I know about. Maybe some of them will be new to you, and some of you may have other routes that you know about that none of us even do. So, with that as an intro, okay, quick overview. We'll talk about the big ones: Minneapolis Park, St. Paul Park. We're going to be running a lot of those during this training session. Three Rivers Park, state parks. There are lots of other parks, but those are really the big ones you're going to find around the metro area. Those different categories. Okay, Minneapolis. And you guys probably all know this. Know these trails. If you don't, we're going to be running them quite a bit over the next few months. And then on October 5th, 4th, one of those days.
Fourth.
You could run them a bit more. On the 4th, you will get to experience them all again, all at the same time. So you've got your legs now, Westford Road. I'm not going to go into those really, but I do want to highlight something that we're not going to get to in this class. Probably at school schedule, maybe we do. The Theodore Worth Trail in North Minneapolis, not too far from here. Is Chris Taylor here?
No, he left.
He left. Okay. He is a big proponent of that trail. There are miles of soft trails up there. Some of them are bike mountain bike trails. Sort of have to let those folks use it when they're on the trails, but they're kind of part of the Grand Rounds. It's just something, it's a really neat thing North Minneapolis, a lot of people don't know about. The Winchell Trail is another one that a lot of people don't know about, but you've probably run by it dozens of times. It's the soft trail that runs along West River Road. Would a map be helpful?
Probably.
It's the soft trail, here's a map of Minneapolis trails. So here are the lakes. Here's where Theodore Worth is up here. Just you know, miles and miles of soft trails, lots of hills. It's a great place. And you never know you were so close to the lakes, but not have anybody there except for you running them. So here's the West River Road that you've probably run on 100 times, but just below that, there's a soft trail for much of the way that's actually maintained by Minneapolis Park, called the Winchell Trail. And so that's a nice soft trail quiet option. I wouldn't necessarily recommend running it after dark, but it is a nice option for a Saturday run. Right, let's skip around a bit here. And of course, you've got your bike corridors too. That you can use as a running trail to get to places. We ran on Kenilworth this past weekend, you know, and the Cedar Lake Trail, and we ran underneath the Greenway. You might know those as being more bike corridors, but certainly you could run on them as well. And again, like I said, don't forget North Minneapolis. There are lots of great trails up there, and I just really encourage you all to experience North Minneapolis through, and one way you can do that is through their trails. The Grand Rounds goes through there, through Cedar Worth and Victory Memorial. Victory Memorial is just, if you haven't been up there, it's one of the hidden jewels of, and somewhat forgotten jewels of Minneapolis.
MDRA Memorial Day, or Labor Day weekend, 5 days.
And that's a great time to go up there for that race, and the whole neighborhood throws a big party for us for runners, the running community. It's probably one of the best races of the year. Just a fun event. And yeah, kids races, 5K, 10K. Very flat. Very flat. It takes you by all the World War I monuments, which are the trees. Okay. Great connections to surrounding areas from Minneapolis, the St. Paul Trail, the western suburbs, Fort Snelling. So here's a map that I just showed you, but you can see all the trails. Here's Victor Memorial's up here north. It actually is a makes a dog leg, and that's what the race runs on, but it's also just a beautiful area. The Grand, and you know, obviously, the Grand Rounds goes all the way around it, but you can find all of this information online, and I encourage you to do so. St. Paul, other than, you know, Mississippi River Road, which we'll get to experience in the class, you've probably run before, and running along Summit, which you've done before, you know, we did that 2 weeks ago. There are some other places, too, and we'll experience some of them in the class. Hidden Falls, we'll do a run from there. That's along the Mississippi River. Crosby Farms. So here's the river. You know, we run along here, and there's Summit. We'll run along there towards the end of some race in October. Hidden Falls Park is just a little further down the river. Crosby Farms also down here. They're down in the floodplain, really down next to the river. Beautiful trails down there. Some soft trails, some paved trails. And really just a way to get away from a lot the big crowds. It's a lot quieter than the lakes. And it's just something, you know, something different. And those all connect into downtown St. Paul. There are good network of trails that run on both sides of the river. It's through Harriet Island Park. Mike and I just did a run there last week. Just through Lilydale and the all along the southern side of the river there. Beautiful trails. Really recommend. But there's also some further out that aren't as well connected, but are great, have great loops too, like Lake Phelan up here and Como Lake. You know, there are lots of races up there too, 5Ks and even shorter races. You know, they're pretty lakes. They're not quite as busy as the Minneapolis lakes. They're worth checking out too on a run. And there's some soft trails out on the east side. Battle Creek is way out over here on the east side of St. Paul. Great trail running out there with a lot of hills. Very similar to Theodore Run. So if you're on the east side, you probably are familiar with Battle Creek. Okay, Three Rivers Parks. These are all about soft trails and hills. And if you like soft trails like a lot of us do, then you probably are familiar with them. And you will be familiar with one of the Three Rivers Park next weekend. No, next Tuesday we're meeting at Highland Hills. But there are other Three Rivers Parks as well. They're a little further out, and here's a map showing them. So this is Hennepin County. They're all Hennepin County Parks. It used to be called Hennepin County Park System or something like that, and now it's called Three Rivers. So we are right over here on Highway 100 and 62, and Highland Park is just down here, so you'll get a map to it from your coaches, but you know, probably about 12 or 15 miles of soft trails down there. Lots of paved trails too, if you prefer to run on paved trails. It's really quiet. And as you get further out in the suburbs, you have some larger parks like Carver and Baker and French and Elm Creek up here in the northern suburbs. Murphy Hanrahan. All these have a lot of soft trails and a lot of hills, and they're just, if you're out in those areas, it's worth stopping and trying to do a long run or an hour run out there. Especially in the fall, a lot of these places just have gorgeous meadows. A lot of them have oak savannas and lots of beautiful prairies. And in the springtime, a lot of them do controlled burns, so that's actually a neat time to be out there when they're doing. Right after they do a controlled burn. Maybe not during the burn, but right after when it's all started. State parks, we've got some of those. Fort Snelling, I think we'll do one of the runs next week. Or this week.
We're not going to do Pike Island.
We're going to do Pike Island?
No.
Oh, never mind. We're going to be here. Pardon? Okay. Mike did. Fort Snelling, it actually connects to Minneapolis Falls. If you haven't been down there, it's only, you know, 1 mile down the trail, and then all of a sudden you're down in the river bottoms, the confluence of the Minnesota and the Mississippi River. also along the Minnesota River, that this kind of all connects together down in the floodplain. This Sibley House area, the historic city of Mendota, from South Bank of Minnesota River. There's a 6-mile trail that kind of goes between the Mendota Bridge and the Cedar Bridge. You know, just very flat, lots of flat, soft trails down there. Really good maps on the state's website. I won't show you their maps, but you can go to the state park website for Fort Snelling, and you can see all the trails down there. You know, this is a map of I just want to show you a couple of resources on the interwebs. There are some great bike maps, which double as running route maps. No reason you can't run on these same trails as a biker. Hennepin County's got a great one that they maintain. This is from 2 years ago, so it's probably even more up to date. I think they actually extended the Loose Line, and they're working on connecting the Loose Line into Theodore Worth. So the connections are growing, which is really exciting. So this just shows all the Minneapolis trails. It shows the Hennepin County trails, the Three Rivers Park trails. Shows some of the local city trails too. You could get from right here all the way out to Harbor County. It's great. All the metro parks, some little ones that if you happen to live in these areas, they're worth checking out. Maybe not worth, you know, 45-minute drive for, but if you live in Richfield, there's a nice little lake right along 35W. It's about a 2-mile loop in a nature preserve right on 35W. You never know it because it's hidden by a town barrier, but it's a really neat place to run. Bredesen Park, which you just got to experience. I actually really like it. I know Mike doesn't. And a lot of people. I do. Down in Bloomington, Lake Normandale, there's a nice 2-mile loop there, and that connects in with Highland Park. Way out in the eastern suburbs, Lake Elmo Park Preserve. Now this is worth the drive. I'd really recommend getting out there if you ever find yourself out on the east side out here, Woodbury or Lake Elmo. It's a beautiful prairie with probably about 10 to 12 miles of soft trails. Marker Hills up in Coon Rapids, lots of soft trails. Long Lake up in New Brighton, also some great trails. So if you're up in those northern suburbs, definitely worth checking those out. And always look at your community park website. They usually aren't as up to date or with as good as maps as Minneapolis or St. Paul's or Hennepin County's websites, but they'll have something. Maybe they'll say, oh yeah, people can run here. And then you go there and you might find 3 or 4 miles of trails that you didn't even know. Down Dakota County, well, I do want to mention a couple of trails down there. The Dakota County Parks maintains some great parks just like Hennepin County does. Lebanon Hills, this is actually my favorite park in the metro area. It's probably got 20, 30, 40 miles worth of soft trails. It's amazing. It's just, if you love hills and you love being out in different types of forests and prairies, and it's awesome. I can't talk enough about it. Terrace Oaks is also a really neat trail, and it's buried in a neighborhood in Burnsville. You wouldn't even know it was there until you stumbled across it, but it's got a really good, very hilly 5K loop. It's a lot of fun. Other trails, like the regional trails that connect, you know, again, look up online, look for the metro bike connector routes. You can always run on those too. And then there are always, you know, my advice would always be open to trying new routes. Look for those local resources that I suggested, like the local websites. A great book to check out is written by Kate Haviland. She actually has spoken in front of the group a couple of years ago. It's called Minnesota Running Trails. And she reviews soft trails all over the state, and she, including about 30 or 40 in the Twin Cities. And she even provides, in the back, a little tear-out index card so that you can tear out the little step-by-step directions so you can run the 12-mile loop that she's recommended without getting lost. So you don't have to carry this big broken map. So that's that. I have this in a PDF that perhaps the coaches could put up online.
That'd be great.
Cool. And I've got several maps here too, and I won't show them all, but these are good places to start. Maybe we can put those up online too. I can email them to the coaches.
You had them last year, right?
What?
You have them last year.
Yep. So if you can grab them. Great. You can grab the PDF too.
That'd be great.
Cool. And the only one that I didn't mention that I see here is there's the Afton State Park. So again, if you find yourself on the east side, I'm trying to highlight parks all over the Twin Cities. Find if you live on the east side of the metro, Afton is worth the drive out to. It's only about maybe 20 minutes from downtown St. Paul. Lots of soft trails there along the St. Croix River. Very beautiful. Huge oak savanna there too. So I think I've used my allotted time. I'll turn it back over to Mike and Marty. I guess any questions?
I'll just throw in 2 cents. Another resource is mapmyrun.com. You guys are familiar with that. It's a Google mapping site. You can map your own run. You can also look at other map run that people have done to share. Sometimes it's like some guy is his run from his house. So they need help. But other times there are more like, you know, the lake trail or, you know, more public routes. So that's another source for you guys to look at. Oh yeah, or if you're going to be out of town, you can always use Map My Run to get around San Diego or something. And people can raise and stuff like that.
Maybe another thing I can bring up, or some of these trails are secluded, or run with someone, or tell someone to be there. Okay. Plus, I need nothing trails do for you. I love trails. They extend my life as a runner. Pavement kills me. Trails, I can run much further on it. Just the pounding over the years. Ken probably can attest to it. I like trails better. So if you're looking at doing running for a long-term thing, want soft trails as much as possible. Next, we're going to talk about training principles. I kind of handed out each sheet that my wife, Deb, wrote up a couple years ago. She's an expert on most of this stuff. We used to have someone come in here every year and give an hour and a half lecture talking about training, the technical terms. We're going to give you a brief overview of it, and then kind of talk about what it actually means to each one of you, how to interpret it. This kind of doesn't do you any good to talk over your head and find out all this information and go, well, how does that apply to me? Each of you are starting in a different place as far as how much you're running, your time goal, how many first timers do we have here? So most of your time goal is probably you want to finish the marathon. That's it, no time goal. Some of you might be running, say you're running 402, 407, and you want to break 4 hours, so you might want to have time goal to break 4 hours. Some of you might be close to a Boston qualifier, and you've been getting close, and you want to know, how do I get to my Boston qualifier? So we'll talk about that for a little bit here. First phase of training is the base training, probably the most important part. Anything you do right all year, base about is just put in your mileage. Don't worry about your pace at first. Your pace will eventually come. And of course, those of you who are just looking at finish, you don't never have to worry about your pace. Just complete your runs. As far as on your long runs, you're going to see rules of thumb. If you look, you're going to scout the internet, read books. People are going to tell you anywhere running from 5 seconds over your planned marathon pace to 3 minutes. For each one of you, it's going to be a little bit different. I kind of suggest a different route. Run your long runs at a nice, comfortable pace, okay? See where your time is afterwards. And kind of we'll go from there to see how you should adjust to that. Always when you're finishing these long runs, tell yourself, hey, if I wanted to, I could have gone further. And if I wanted to, I could have gone quicker. I just chose not to. Everyone kind of understand that type of philosophy, makes sense?
Yeah, for those of you who are building up and not done a 20 miler yet, or you know, maybe the longest you run is 12 or maybe 6, you might feel after you've done your first 15 miler, oh my gosh, there's no way I could run 5 more miles, let alone 12, you know, or 11 and a half. Or, you know, after the, I'm
cannot tell you how many runners have said after that first 20 miler, I can't imagine doing 6 more miles. That's okay. That's all right. It's a natural progression. You're training for October 4th, not training for the 20 miler on August 20th. So there's, I think that's the only caveat. If you're building up mm-hmm. to those distances for the first time ever, you might feel like you couldn't go any further, and that's okay. You will be able to by the time we get to the marathon day.
It's always progression. And sometimes if you're dead tired, we kind of space these things out. We give you a little bit of a range. If you're really hurt, say on a 13-mile run this last weekend, you don't have to go 14 this weekend. Just kind of back off just a little bit. It's okay. We have 3 20-milers on the schedule. Okay, we put that on there. Of course, we want you to get 1. 2 would be great. 3 for the people who've been in this class before, run enough miles. That's good for you. For the first-time marathoners, you don't have to do 3. But if we put them in there, that kind of give a little bit of flexibility in there for you. Okay?
Let me just keep in mind the number one goal is to get to the starting line healthy. So,
yeah,
you got to think about that as you decide what your distance on the long run day is going to be.
Any questions on long run? Next, we'll go over some technical phrases. For those that know me, I'm not too big on these type of things. I'm more as what you might call the old school type runner, where you just go out and run. Terms you're going to hear is one is VO2 max. Sounds pretty intimidating. Basic definition of it is how much oxygen, milliliters of oxygen you take in per minute per divided by your weight. So you can go to the YMCA or Lifetime Fitness, they'll put you on a machine. You're gonna pay $125, get this test, and they're gonna tell you how much it is or how much oxygen you take in, give you a number, your VO2 max number, and kind of give you a pace, what that number is. So your pace might be 8 minutes or 9 minute pace for your VO2 max. Cheap way to do it, go warm up, go to the track, go run 10 minutes, see how far you go. Divide, if you run 5 laps, that's 8 minute pace, your VO2 max is 8 minutes. Roughly. They'll save you $125. And why you need to know that number for us, I don't know. Maybe for the world class guys, they might need to. But most of us, we do not need to know.
Is that 10 minutes all out or 10 minutes?
10 minutes all out. Just go as fast as you can. I cheat, and Mike knows this. I do a mile. I'll go run a mile on the track right before grandma's. I go run a mile. I kind of know, well, if I run a mile at 6:10, well, for 10 minutes, I'll probably run about 6:20 pace, kind of guess. And do with that information, you can find books and charts, and they'll tell you, based on your VO2 max, what paces you should run certain things at. That's hardcore science. I think marathon running is more of art. Each of you is going to be your own best coach eventually. Need to learn how to interpret your own body. We're here to advise you. You give us all your information. We'll tell you what we think you should do. But in the long run, each one of you is going to know what's best for you. The next term is going to be what's called lactic threshold. I always get a kick out of that one. That's when you run at a certain pace and your body is producing more lactic than it is dumping out. So it starts accumulating into your bloodstream. And that causes, I want to say, hydrogen ions to affect your muscles to slow you down. Way they test that, only way to do it, you go for a run at different paces, they have to take blood on you. Okay, and they test it to see if you start accumulating. You can estimate this pace. I think there's a number compared to your VO2 max. It's not exact. Once again, it's going to be in textbooks. It's going to be in training manuals. Improve your lactic threshold. How much detail for us you need to do. I honestly don't think you do. The most important thing is, as Mike's preached from day one, time on your feet, get the runs in, try to run 5-6 days a week. That's going to help you improve all those things without going through it. Other terms we're going to talk about would be tempo. Tempo pace by definition is going to be how your pace is if you run for an hour. Some of you, if you run a 10K in an hour, you know what that's your tempo pace. Pretty straightforward. Any other terms they use?
No, but I mean, that covers the rest.
Yeah. And all of us that's going to be in here, you can find literally books on this type of stuff. You can spend your time reading it, or you can spend your time running, which might benefit you a little bit more, honestly. I've been doing this for a long time, trained with a lot of good people back a long time ago. They didn't talk about VO2 max, they didn't talk about lactate threshold. I went for runs. One day would be a hard day, one day would be an easy day, kind of alternated. Make sure on your recovery days you rest. Okay, and for some of you, after Saturday's run, you might have been pretty tired. So Sunday, Monday, the best thing is you see 3 to 5 miles. The pace you should go at is whatever pace you need to. If you need to walk, then walk. Say you run 8 minute pace on your Saturday run, Sunday and Monday. If you need to run 9 or 10 minute pace, go ahead. It's just a recovery day. All you're doing is you're circulating your blood, and that's just helping your body heal. Mm-hmm. Questions on that? Did everyone hear a question? She wants to know why it's important to do it the next day. Big thing for me, I feel I recover better by moving. If you start moving, your blood's circulating. Blood circulating heals the body. Okay, if you sit there, you do nothing, your blood's not circulating, you're not going to heal as quickly. Of course, there's a fine balance. You don't want to overdo it where you start stressing your body again. Because if you do that, then you're starting to build tiredness on top of tiredness on top of tiredness, and eventually feel a little bit burnt out.
I think there's lactic acid buildup. There's something that's in your legs that gets filled up. I think it's leftover lactic acid. And by getting the run in, you get the blood moving, you're working the gunk out. Basically, you're working the gunk out of your legs.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it and you sit and rest, it sits there. And it's going to be there on Monday. And I mean, I remember when I first, for my first marathon, I think the longest I ever ran was 15 miles. And I remember 18 miles, and Marty said, go run 20 minutes tomorrow. And it felt, the first 5 minutes just felt impossible. I was like, are you kidding me? I can't run right now. My legs are shot. But after, I mean, I'm talking maybe three to four minutes per mile slower than what I was running yesterday, but I was shuffling. And by the last 5 minutes, I was running. It looked like I was running. If you go by, you know, that guy's going on for a jog. So I was able to sort of get that running form back. And then I felt better the next day. If I had taken the day off because running just seemed like a pipe dream, it would have felt like a pipe dream on Monday as well.
And, well, like if your legs are beat up and your quads are sore, and sometimes that is going to happen, there's no way you can run, go for a walk.
Yeah.
Or go for a light bike ride, not hard. So you're just getting some type of movement, go for a swim, just do some small activity, just to get the circulation going and flowing. Let's see. Hills, which we're going to start this week. Okay. I'm horrible on here, hills, but I love doing hills. Okay? Hills help you so much. You don't have to sprint up hills. Okay, if you know when you start piling next week, as soon as you start going up, you're going to feel your heart rate going up. Okay, when you're running these hills at first, we kind of want you to keep the same effort. So of course, when you're going up, you're going to be going a little slower. That's okay. What we're doing, you're using your muscles a little bit different. You're driving up. For those of us who used to have the worst form in the world, where I'd be running like this. I tell you what, when you run hills, it corrects it. Somehow when you start running hills, you just get into a natural form, and all of a sudden, hey, my arms aren't crossing the center anymore. Hey, my head's not moving. For whatever reason, just running up and down hills helps you improve your form, strengthen your legs.
Yeah, I mean, early on especially, you want to focus on form over speed. I'm doing a lot of hill work right now because I'm going to run the TC10. And my workouts have been a lot better now that instead of focusing on how fast I can get this hill, it's been where's the breaking point when my form still holds normal and I don't have to be running like this to get up the hill. And it's just, I think as we do these hills, we're going to do 4 weeks of them. Focus on form, the speed will come as you focus on the form. And my arms will get beat. I mean, I'm not like built like Kevin over here, but.
And your arms have been tired right now.
My arms get beat. It's a workout.
I have a question. So, how many days, if I already have pills in my workout, should I come back down and just keep doing one day? Do I need to invite to Thursday pills usually? Or should I cut that off?
You can do Tuesday, Thursday. Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to live down there in Asheville, North Carolina, in the Smoky Mountains. One of my favorite runs to do, I'd have someone drop me off at the bottom of the trail, and I'd run the trail all the way up the mountain, about 17 miles, climb 3,000 feet, and someone pick me up at the top. It's the greatest workout in the world. You get everything covered. You get your distance covered, you get your speed covered, everything. You just get in much better shape. Another point is, on the downhills, you can get hurt. When you see steep downhills, don't sprint down them. You're going to overextend your legs, you're going to hurt your quads, your knees, your ankles, you might fall, it's just not worth it. So be cautious on some of the downhills that we do. No need to overdo it.
The only thing I'll throw in is for race day thinking, especially for those of you guys running Twin Cities Marathon, there's going to be some hills in there. Nothing like we're going to be doing in Highland. But enough to where you want to start thinking about perceived effort. You don't want to change your perceived effort of that hill. And what that means, especially in the first mile two of TCM, there's a decent hill. And guys are so, I mean, guys and women, everybody, just so full of energy that they just, you just can't help but take off that hill. And if you don't change your perceived effort, they're going to pull away. And let them go, because you're going to get them back. Because that mile two, I think, is where a lot of people's marathon blows up. They don't feel to mile 20, but it's because of what they did at mile two. Think about perceived effort, think about form, don't worry about being, get up there as fast as you can. Your heart rate's gonna go up on its own.
Yes. Other workouts we're gonna do, we don't do too much speed here, okay? Marathon's all about getting to that finish line. If you can't, it's hard to run the race fast if you can't finish the race. So a big goal is to build endurance. The speed will come later. It's not true, but it will happen for us. Okay?
If you are interested in performance and how to increase your time in speed workouts, we can work with you on that, but it's not going to be the general tenor of the class. But we can certainly individualize.
Yeah, I mean, even back a long time ago, I could run a little quicker than I do now. Very little was done on speed. 5% of my running. Very, very small amount. It's not needed. Important thing is building that endurance, and that's done through, as Mike's preaching, I'm going to preach, getting in 5-6 days a week, gradually building your miles, and the time will always come for you. And a little trick I do on tiredness, each of you, as I said before, is going to be your own best coach, okay? You need to monitor how tired you are, and I've been running 30 years, Mike's been running a long time. It's easy for each one of us to lie to ourselves pretty easily. We think, oh, I'm not tired, I'm gonna go do a workout. Oh, I'm not tired. But you really do need to monitor it. One little thing I do, I take a pulse every day. Okay, get kind of a base for your resting pulse. You'll notice as time goes on, the better shape you get in, your resting pulse should lower. If your resting pulse starts going up, you're tired. You're tired, you're sick, something is going on in your body, and that's where you really need to monitor, okay, how fast am I running these runs, how long am I running these runs, do I need to really take a day or two off, you know, what do I need to do, and come talk to us about it. If that starts happening to you, we'll figure something out. Kevin.
Marty, I had a couple questions about training with gels and shot blocks and whatnot. Can you talk about your thoughts on
I'm old school again.
Oh.
I've had one gel in my life.
Oh.
I might be the wrong person on that.
Right.
Back in my day, honestly, we drank Coca-Cola. We eat M&M's, peanut butter bread. Seriously, that's what we would take in. Mike might be able to.
I was converted. I was on the edge. I was running during the end of the old school era. So I've got conversion gels, for sure. We're going to have a nutritionist talk in 2 weeks, and she can hopefully, what I'll basically I'm highlight what she said. Every 45 minutes is about when it's time to refuel. And that's going to be different for everybody based on your pace. It works for me. When I get to my when I get to mile 20, it's about when it might be time for another gel. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know, my stomach isn't really up for this, so I don't take it. Sometimes I want this placebo for some of these races because you're going to get a lot of the nutrients you need from the Gatorade. But it doesn't, you know, I'd say every 45 minutes, go ahead and try it out. And that's what these long runs are for. There's a lot of different kinds of gels out there, and I can't recommend one to you because it's going to be an individual difference about what works and what doesn't. I like the Power Bar gels. I can't remember the name. Power gels? But, you know, it took trial and error. I tried a whole bunch of them until I found the one I want. Now, you're supposed to take them with water. That's the other thing.
I don't think that's true at all. I've been taking gels since they came out with them. I think you take a gel, you go an hour, and that's about when you're at the depletion level. You can take them with or without water.
I'm just telling you what I was
putting on. Every half hour, 45
minutes. And that's the thing, though, is you need to find out what works for you.
Yeah.
The important thing is, that's what Saturdays are here for, practice it, and don't do anything new on marathon day.
I was going to say that as well. Now is the time to start practicing with the gels. If you haven't used them and you're interested, I swear by them. So if you have any questions, you can ask me. But now is the time to start training with them.
See, I'll have someone out, of course, throw me a shake up Coke, fizz out, throw it to me, and eat it. Or I'll grab it, have someone give me a handful of M&M's and sugar.
Yep.
And you burn it. Just boom. That's what your preference is.
Funny. I mean, you ask around, you're going to hear, you ask 20 people, you'll probably hear 15 different answers. Find out what works for you.
Steve.
Well, just to say with your Coke thing, if anybody watches the Tour de France, then there, you'll watch them. That's what those guys take at the food stops. They'll literally hand them cans of Coke. So, you know, it might be old school. It's still happening.
Don't do it unless you do it beforehand. In the class 5-6 years ago, there's Jude Mertz was in the class, and I had him convince Coke, M&M's, any type of sugar. And I swear his entire family was out on that course, because every 2 miles, somebody was trying to hand us a Coke or M&M. And he's like, okay, that's enough. You only need so much. I mean, your body's going to get you through about 20 miles, so another 6 miles, you might need 400-500-600 calories out there. You can kind of figure that out on your long runs beforehand. You know, if you need 2 gels for 20 miles, you might need 3 or 4 to make it 20 sets for that extra 6 miles.
I was doing gummy lifesavers for a long time, but the gels are a eater. Don't help with my
pocket. What's the sponsored drink?
Powerade. The blue stuff.
The blue stuff, yes.
So we'll have that out.
Yes, we got a fresh batch of Powerade today.
So that's for TCM. If you're running a different marathon, you can just enjoy Powerade.
More questions?
The only thing I'll say about the training, if you look at the, you know, we're doing base building. Next is hill, which is supposed to be strength building. We're going to do some pace work. It's not like when we're done with hills, kind of getting back to what you're talking about. Okay, we're done with hills, now I'm going to do speed. Like, you don't ever stop doing any of these phases. You want to look for hilly routes throughout your runs, especially because the marathon's going to have some hills in it. It doesn't mean you focus on form and try and, you know, focus on the hill, but you just want to kind of add them into your easy runs. You do that, you're still working on hills. That's something you can start today. Well, tomorrow.
Yes.
That's it.
I had an issue with my printer at work, which is, well, I should have been working, I know, but I was trying to print out my document for you guys. Work. So I'm going to try and pull it up here. If it doesn't, you are going to watch an awesome job of cleaning this presentation. So what I'm going to cover is, I think you're about to watch an awesome job of cleaning this presentation. Hold on a second. I'm going to cover sort of what Marty was talking about, you know, sort of goes into the idea of, I'm going to cover two things, goals and just sort of how to
apply mentally everything that we talked about. Because it's real easy when you're in a group, two things can happen. If you're in a group one, it's really easy to go out too hard, because if you're with 10 people, there's going to be some variation, and usually the guy who's fastest is going to be the one who's going to start dictating the pace. So you might be going too hard. Or the second thing that can happen is you might feel discouraged because you're working so hard. So we kind of want to talk about, you know, what mentally it's going to take to sort of execute this plan that we talked about. So the mental approach to training, and then also the mental approach to race day. It's important to start thinking about that now, because, I mean, who hasn't thought about the marathon yet, right? I mean, it's on our minds, so let's start preparing about it in the correct way. And then I also want to kind of talk about mental discipline versus mental toughness, and talk a little about goal setting. So in terms of the mental approach to training, I think what you want to kind of think about running a marathon is kind of like flying an airplane, is the analogy. If you get real emotional like flying an airplane, you can be like, oh, I'm flying, this is awesome, and you're probably crap. Or, holy crap, I'm flying, this is scary, and you're probably crap. Pilots are notoriously, you know, calm, cool, and collected, and they have a plan and they follow it. And that's kind of what you want to have starting, you know, 2 weeks ago. Simply by following the training schedule that we have planned out, you know, running 4, 5, 6 days a week, you are following the plan. What you want to kind of do is kind of set policies for yourself. Something to think about would be, Emily can attest to this, I'm really bad at this, but saying, when I get home, I'm going to be running within 15 minutes, no matter the weather condition. Have a rule or something like that, that it doesn't matter what the weather is like, it doesn't matter what traffic's like, it doesn't matter how tired you are, within reason. You're going to go out and get that run in, that workout in. Because on race day, they're not going to wait for you to feel good. They're not going to wait for it to be a good time for you. You have to go regardless of the weather condition. If your health is in jeopardy, they'll call the race. Especially, I know for a fact that Twin Cities Marathon will call it if your health is going to be in jeopardy, because they don't want to have a repeat of 2007. So that's just sort of, I think as you're sort of doing all these workouts, you just kind of want to think about, well, what's my policy, what's my rule here? Okay, that's the number one thing. When it comes to the long run, you already touched on this, you want to kind of have, already be thinking about treating these long ones as a dress rehearsal. What fueling system works for you, what garb is going to work for you, what do you wear, and start playing around with that now. What's your morning routine like? Right? What's it going to take so that you get all the bathroom stuff taken care of? So that you have the right meal that sits with you, so there's not more bathroom stuff to take care of, you know, mile 20. Things like that. And then, you know, ask around. If you're new to marathoning, ask around. See what works for other people. When I first ran my marathon with Marty, we pulled in the parking lot at Best Western on the grandma's course, and he had donuts and Mountain Dew. So.
That's for reason, man.
What's that?
There is a race mail.
Well, ask around. Think critically. Do what works for you. See, for me, I came into running marathons from a 5K, 8K cross-country kind of perspective. And it really took me 2 or 3 races to figure this distance out. And you know, I think one of the things about being a distance runner, and I've said this before, is that distance runners aren't really supposed to think. Right? I mean, the more you think, sometimes the more trouble you get into. Now, if you think this is going to be harder, I can't do this, or, you know, oh my gosh, I just ran 20 miles, I'm supposed to run 26 in a month, how's that ever going to happen? That's the kind of thinking that you should. That's what it does. It's an essence of mind. So, but the approach that I brought to the table was, the gun went off, it's time to race. And I remember running with Marty, I mentioned this on the first day, that you know, we were together at mile 20 and he ran at 250 and I barely broke 3. What happened in those 6 miles is the difference between an experienced marathoner and a rookie.
I had Coca-Cola now and then.
That's right. I started racing right away. And I was like, you know what, I can gut out any race. I'm tougher than anybody around me. I'm not tougher than 26 miles. And I didn't know that. And there's such a difference because you have a lap to go in a race and boy, you can just tough it out. But when the wheels come off, I'm not scaring anybody here, but when the wheels come off, there's no
there's no gutting it out. There's no toughing it out. There's stopping or just going this one pace that you have left. Okay? That's not supposed to scare you. It's just supposed to say, be disciplined. If you're disciplined from start to finish, you're going to be okay. You know, mental toughness is great for running a 5K. It's great for running a half marathon. It has no business in a marathon. So maybe mile 23. You want to kind of have that pilot's calm, cool, collected. When I run those first 13 miles, I like to think that I'm sort of flying above the whole field, you know. Roger Robinson's another very, very good.
Was he looking to qualifier type marathoner?
I don't know. Yeah, he came and talked about 3 years ago to the class, and he talked about running in a bubble for the first 10, 15 miles so that you can kind of take everything in, but you're not darting over there to give somebody a high five. You're not just getting crowded and doing everything like that. You're just sort of observing and sort of taking it in, but you're not interacting. You're not letting the moment take you away. What you want to visualize for the first 10, 15, 20 miles is you running your own race. You want to visualize people pulling away from you, especially on the Twin Cities Marathon course. Those hills, if you run them too hard too soon, are going to come back to get you. If you run them with the exact same effort as you do go up, down, or flat, you're going to be strong and mild. And so think about that sort of mental discipline it takes to filter all of that out. You kind of want to have that mental discipline now. You want to kind of be able to say, okay, you know, I'm running with the Kenyans. They're doing about 8:30s today. I feel more like 8:45. Let them go. Look around. Maybe somebody else is going to go with you. Maybe you're feeling good. You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to pick up the pace, or are you going to stay with the game plan that's right in front of you? Your mental discipline, you can stay with what's with you. So those are sort of the big picture here. That, you know, you want to be more sort of disciplined, more analytical, and use the fire and brimstone and the piss and the vinegar for the last 3 miles of the race. That's what I'm saying.
And what might happen sometimes, say, I'm used to running the cabin, and maybe Mike runs behind us, and 5 miles in the race, Mike passes us. We're like, well, he's not supposed to pass us. Don't think that. Run your race, not someone else's race. Or if I'm running with Kevin and we're at a water stop, I think this happened to us, where I got stuck at a water stop and he probably pulled 10, 15 seconds ahead of me. Don't go make up that 10, 15 seconds in the next quarter mile. You make it up over time. Just maintain your pace, stay calm like the pilot, you'll get there, don't worry about it. Because anytime you increase that pace, you take so much more energy out of you, and you're going to pay for it at that.
Yeah, I remember that actually, because when I pulled ahead, when I got to the water stop, I remember thinking like,
this is great, you must be back there thinking I'm doing so awesome, and I'm just going out, this is so awesome.
Because you know, he was just like, you were just sitting in the weeds. There wasn't even a race. We were doing our own thing. But I was so caught up in the fact that I had this gap. The mile, what, 18? Not even that, mile 13.
Somewhere right there.
Yeah.
And just like, been around enough, no. That's a mistake to do. Someone pulls ahead of you, don't worry about it. You'll catch them. If you don't catch them, you don't catch them. Run your race, not someone else's race. Very important to remember. It takes discipline to do it, because you're going to see someone, say Mike's there and I'm here, and just like, well, it's not going to take me much effort to catch them at the time, but you're going to pay for it later, so you don't even worry about it.
And really, I really hope this isn't supposed to be like, sound like it's intimidating or scaring anybody. And it's like, you better do this or you're going to crash. Because that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say this is a very manageable, doable race. But you kind of need to start with that control from the start. Are there any questions about all this? I want to talk a little bit about goals. I'm going to use a visual aid here. There's two sets of goals to think about. The first is the goal for this whole training program. The second is your goals for race day. Even if your goal is just to finish, I think you can probably have a range of goals. In general, if you read anything about setting goals for races, in general you want to have three sets of goals. The first is the baseline goal, which I don't want to call a low goal, because I think the baseline goal is the most important goal. It would be the intermediate goal, it would be the high goal. So for the class, I'm going to do my little triangle here. That's a pretty isosceles. Okay. So
I think for the class, for these two goals, we all have the same goal. This one is to have fun or have a good experience. Right? I hope you're enjoying yourself so far. I mean, maybe not, you're not enjoying yourself because I'm talking right now, but if you do it in the last, you know, whatever it's been, a couple weeks, 3 weeks, or it's been a good week. All right. When you're done, no matter what happens on race day, when you're done, if your goal is just to say, you know what, I wanted to run a marathon and said I did it, and you did it, then you had a good experience. Maybe when you're done, you want more. You want to keep running. You learned some good things. You know, you picked up some training tips. You made some good friends. You picked up some training partners. That's a pretty big accomplishment. That's a pretty big success. You know, when I started NBRA in 2000, I didn't really have a whole lot of running peers anymore. I was sort of on my own, and I wasn't really, I was just sort of drifting. And I've made a lot of good friends this way. So I would say that even though maybe I got my butt kicked by Marty in that race, I would call it a success, right? The second thing is we want to get the starting line healthy. Everybody here wants that. We all want that for each other, and of course, you want it for yourself. Nothing in here about finishing the race, nothing on here about, you know, any time. You want to get to the starting line healthy. We're in injury season, dealing with knocks and dings already. We're going to work through those together. And then the last goal for the whole program would be your time or, how would you say this? Race goal. What's your race goal? Okay. Now, if you look, though, this is like if you did the, you're a math geek, right? This is the most surface area here, right? If you don't reach your time goal, if you don't reach whatever your big goal for taking this class is, but you got to the starting line healthy, you had a good experience, and you actually had a pretty good, you know, run, a pretty good 16 weeks out, so 14 weeks. If you get hurt along the way, this is still about half the goal. Hopefully, and it's really hard to say, yeah, I had a good experience, I got hurt. But hopefully you're going to, you know, learn some things, make some friends, and you're going to get healthy in the next go around. We'll be back for more. Now, we want to kind of blow this race day goal up a little bit. And this is really hard if you are new to running, new to marathoning, because how are you going to pick a time goal? How are you going to pick your marathon pace? I think Marty and I have spoken a lot about it just in terms of getting out the door and running every day and your training partners around you. You're going to find that pace. The 20 miles that we do, the 18 miles that we do, the 16 miles that we do are all going to teach you that pace. But it's nice to throw a little, you know, have some numbers to work with. Okay. For everybody, all share the same baseline goal, and that's to finish the race. And let me tell you, this is not necessarily a failure if you don't finish the race, because sometimes you might want to finish the race and be healthy. We don't want anybody ending up in the hospital or, you know, having any worse things happen.
Year goal, I'm driving my car, my wife does run a Journeys marathon. About 20 miles into a race, I see a guy sprinting the wrong way. I'm driving up further, and I hear people, anyone know CPR? So, of course, immediately I park my car, jump over and see on the side of the road. There's a guy. He's done, and his face is bleeding. He's not breathing. We start pounding. Start the CPR pounding on him. We got him breathing. Got the ambulance there. Unfortunately, the guy did not make it. So if you're in, we always say we want 100% success rate. If you're ever feeling trouble out there, it's not worth it. You know, you can't think straight, quit. There's plenty of places to drop out.
There's plenty of other marathons to run.
Yeah, so there's other days to run a race. You don't want to put yourself in that position.
I mean, you know, if you think about how I had this set up originally, good experience, get to the starting line healthy. If you don't make that finish line goal, you still had a pretty good run. There's still a lot to say with the success, and I don't want to overstate this enough. It can happen to any of us if we drop out. My 2005 marathon, I actually did drop out, Twin Cities, but Emily wasn't where she said she was going to be, so I decided, oh well, since I can't drop out of mile 15, I guess I'll just be running this
thing. A little bit more swift than that.
What's that?
Didn't you try to talk to someone else? Right?
I did. I also talked somebody else into dropping out, too. So, yeah.
probably the marathon that I need to run to where I should be able to dispense advice, because my teammate was like, Mike, we're going too fast, we're going too fast. Like, nope, Mike, we're going out at this pace, and we're going to do it. I don't care how hot it is, our pace, and we're going to do it. This is my plan. And too fast. No. And we got to mile 13. And I was like, is anybody else cold? Because I got goosebumps. And it was like, yeah, human. We were like, no, and maybe just take it easy. So then I was like, oh, okay, so the wheels are going to come off at mile 20. I'm ready for this. I've crashed before. I can handle it. Well, the wheels came off at mile 13. And so I started walking. No, I didn't start walking until about 14. And then I got to 15. That's about where we live. A really good place to drop out. So if you live on the course, that's where you can go. But Emily thought she'd surprise me and be there by mile 19. So the amount of time it took me to drop out, talk my teammate into dropping out, which he did, I was like, you know, maybe I can finish this thing after all. So I did walk and run it, and I did the right thing, maybe finishing. I don't care if I finished, actually, at that time. I didn't care. I'm actually very happy that I did walk it, by the way, stayed healthy. Walked most of it to the finish line. Getting that medal and getting that shirt was probably something I've always taken for granted, and now I won't ever again. But, you know, it's happened to me. It's going to happen to so many people that you know, that there's no shame in saying, you know what, it just wasn't my day. Because if something happens to you that puts you in a medical emergency, having a good experience and getting started on the healthy doesn't really matter anymore, right? So finish healthy. Okay, so finish is still a goal, but I'd like to put it into context of the big picture here. It's not the end all be all. This is sort of the middle goal. This is where you want to sort of say, okay, what's my marathon pace? A good way to get a marathon pace is to go run a half marathon. I don't know if Marty's going to think about this, you can disagree with me if you want, but a good way to get a pace is to go run a half marathon, race it pretty hard. If you add 10 minutes, if you double that and add 10 minutes, that's a pretty good accurate predictor of how you're going to finish. It's pretty stout. If you're doing 2 hours, your predicted finish time of 4:10 is probably pretty accurate. If you finish it in, if you look at, Paul, is that his name? Paul, the American?
Right on.
Yeah, right on. He was the first American to break an hour in the marathon, or in a half marathon. He also ran a 208 at Pretty good. So that formula holds pretty good. So that's one way to kind of figure out what your pace is. Or, who are you training with? Ask them what their pace is. And use that to see if it's right for you. Don't do what they're doing on race day. Otherwise, they might talk to you when you're dropping out of the race. Run your own race, but use each other, use races to figure out what your pace is, and that's how you kind of get this goal. So you want to hit your target pace. Okay? And what's nice about this is you have flexibility. And this is really important, having flexibility. Marty and I ran a marathon, 3 miles again, a couple of years ago, and it was a shocker here, it was a scorcher. It was like 70th start. And we talked about going out together maybe at 640 starts, 640 miles. 640 minute miles. And Marty called me the night before and said, you know, looks like mine's kind of hot. I'm going to do 640s to about mile 10, and then I'm going to decide what I want to do. And I saw him that morning, and, you know, we already had our shirts off, which is
we're sweat,
unfortunately. And he's just like, you know what, Mike, I'm mile 2. I'll decide at mile 2. Well, we got to mile 1, and he already said he was done. He wasn't going to do it. That's the kind of
work.
You didn't drop out.
No, I finished.
But this whole 640 thing was just out the window, and he adjusted because of the weather. Okay? So you have to allow for flexibility. That's what got me in trouble in 2005. I was going to do 630s, and that was just the way it was, and nobody was going to stop me, not even the weather. And I was wrong. So you want to have that kind of flexibility in there. And this last goal is sort of like your high goal. What's your green? What's your green time? Right? And you can start considering this, you can start playing around with like, yeah, I wonder if I could do this. But maybe start thinking that about mile 13. If the weather's perfect, you're feeling good, you hit the split, the half marathon split, you feel pretty good. Now you can start entertaining the notion. Keep on holding your pace. When you get to mile 20, you'll know. You'll know if it's your day. This will be time to go. Okay. Now these are for people with time goals. What if your goal is just to finish, right? Well, you can change it. Finish is still there. Run the whole thing might be your goal, right? Run it all. And the last one, my goal, I would say finish with a smile. Finish passing people. Finish
Now you can get my advice. Get out of the bubble. This is your first marathon ever. Savor it.
You know, you might have to kind of walk, shuffle in, but you want to savor it. And that's really a great line to have in your first marathon, just to really soak it in. It's neat. I always cheer at mile 25. It's just so cool. You can sometimes tell that people are finishing for the first time. So. Yeah.
Last year, there was a person in this room that was crying at mile 25. Who was that, Nathan?
Apparently, you remember.
He was so happy. PR ran 2:53. And he was very happy at mile 25. He started crying.
It's really
he gets emotional.
Yeah, it is. It's an emotional moment. And it's hard not to get choked up. I have to be careful sometimes just talking about it because it really is an exciting time. And, I think really that's really the high goal that we all want to have is if you don't get your dream time, if you don't have a dream experience, if it wasn't your day, I hope that you guys are at least encouraged to stick with it to get that feeling when it is your day because it's pretty special. Not like 5 days, you can do it again next week. I mean, you really are just doing something special by taking the time it takes to run this race, by making the commitment for something that is so not a guarantee. We don't know what the weather's going to be. You don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen that day? You just don't know. So it's a big commitment, and just by making this experience, that's something that should be considered success. Any questions? Saturday. At Fort Snelling. We will dip into Fort Snelling. We're just not going to run back out. Thanks, guys.